Welcome. This is an audio recording of the World Affairs Council of Dallas-Fort Worth. I'm Jim Falk, President of the Council. The Council is a nonprofit membership organization dedicated to engaging the public in an exploration of global issues and foreign affairs, and we produce over 80 public events each year. To learn more about us or to become a member, visit dfwworld.org. This podcast is made possible through the generous support of Haynes & Boone, LLP. We hope you enjoy it.
It is really a pleasure for me to introduce my friend Michael Williams. Commissioner Williams was initially appointed to the Texas Railroad Commission by former Governor George W. Bush in December of 1998 to fill a vacant seat. He was then elected by his fellow commissioners in July of 2007 to chair the commission and also served as chair from September 1999 to September 2003. In November of 2000, the people of Texas elected him to complete the term expiring in the year 2002, and he was most recently elected statewide in 2002. Texans like Michael Williams. He has done a great job on the Railroad Commission. He represents Texas all over America, including on the National Coal Council, which is an advisory board to the U.S. Secretary of Energy. He chairs the Governor's Clean Coal Technology Council. And Michael is an all-around good guy. He's been involved with Big Brothers and Big Sisters of Texas, and he was general counsel to a Texas-based high-tech corporation before he was selected by Governor Bush and then Governor Perry for his current role. One of the problems in living with in a big state like Texas, and there are not many, but one of the challenges and problems is that our leaders end up in Austin, and then we rarely see them in Dallas or Houston unless they're campaigning. So about a year ago, Michael and I were having lunch, and I said, you know, really, I think Dallas needs to know you better than they do. And I think and will predict that you'll see Michael Williams in public service for many years to come. It's a really nice of you to make this stop on your way to Atlanta, where he's going to emcee the big dinner that Newt Gingrich is having tonight. And regardless of your politics, I think you'll agree that Michael Williams is a great servant for the great state of Texas. So please welcome Michael Williams.
Excited to see you. You always go up from here to Martin's Hill, right? you know, you think about it, and I do need to be here a little bit more often than now, because quite frankly, the reality is, my wife and I only live like 20 miles away. We live in Arlington. We maintain a critical residence in Arlington, and obviously the college, I have to live in Austin, so I have something in Austin. But I burn up I-35 all the time. Let me say, what I'd like to do is talk to you about a project that we need to shape and engage in for back in December 2002, Governor Perry created something called the Clean Coal Technology Council and asked me to chair it. He said, you know, in Texas, coal is an enormously important part of our energy mix. Today, obviously, about 52% of the power we generate in this state is natural gas fired. And it's extremely important to us to continue using natural gas because, obviously, of its capacity to provide for clean electricity. But he said, you know, coal is an enormous part of our economy as well. We've got 13 coal mines in the state. We've got a third of our power generated from coal. We've got jobs that are connected to coal. But when I say coal power, Trammell, some of you guys think about, oh my goodness. You think about all that black stuff, right? I'm partial to black stuff. So it doesn't bother me. But I realize you're concerned about sulfur dioxide and CO2 and mercury and particulate matter. You're concerned about that stuff that's going up. So Governor Perry said, Michael, I think that there are these advanced technologies that are being developed that would allow Texas to continue using coal as part of its mix, but do so in a way that's clean. And he says, I want you to go out there and figure out what they are and see how you can encourage Texas power generators to use them. Several months after the creation of the Clean Coal Technology Council, President Bush created something called FutureGen. I think of it as a giant science project. It's $1.5 billion over the course of 10 years to build a small 275 megawatt power facility using various different kinds of coal. And the purpose is to prove through a chemical process called gasification that you can make not only economic power but clean power using this gasifier. The gasifier using sort of a combination between temperature and pressure, taking out the nitric oxide that makes your eyes water, or the sulfur dioxide, or the particulate matter in the mercury. We know it works in the chemical industry because Eastman Kodak has been doing it for 35 years. But we've never done it with power. And so there's a public-private partnership between you and me and the public. We're putting up about 75% of the money. And a consortium of about 12 companies in several countries. China, because they're burning a lot of coal right now and it's all kind of dirty. China, India, South Korea, Japan, and Australia as part of this consortium, paying for this big science project. And so there's a competition around the country to find the one best spot in the country to build this facility. And so I said, well, you know, Bush is my homeboy. Maybe we should try to win this thing. And so did every other state in the country. So we started with a 50-state competition, got whittled down to 19, and now it's down to two states, Illinois, that have two sites, and the state of Texas that have two sites. One of our sites is out in West Texas. We say it's in Odessa, but if you really know anything about West Texas, it's really in Pinwell, but we don't let anybody else know that. And then one in East Texas, outside of the city of Jewett, at the mouth of a Texas lignite mine. And let me just share with you why I think this project is so valuable to Texas and valuable to America. As I said, the first thing is to test this gasification process on a variety of different coals. Bill, in our West Texas site, we propose to use five different kinds of coals. We'll rail in coal from Wyoming, Kentucky, Illinois, Mexico, and pet coke from the Big Spring refinery. In our East Texas site, we'll rail in same coals from Wyoming, Kentucky, and Illinois, but use that Texas lignite that's right there at the mouth of that mine. And to test to make sure that in each one of them, under what circumstances can you make clean power in a way that Texans would want to pay for it, in a way that's economical. So that's the first piece. And second piece, you know, Dick, folks are concerned about global warming, right? And, you know, we realize that the temperature has risen over the last 100 years by 1 degree Fahrenheit, and we got about an increase by 30% of CO2 in the atmosphere. And there's a battle that you can see brewing just by reading newspapers. You know, one side says that one way to attack it is a carbon tax, or maybe an increase to the gas tax. Somebody says maybe there need to be some kind of regulatory scheme where we, you know, set emissions levels. And I happen to think it's always been part of who we are as Texans that we take a sort of more optimistic view about how we solve America's problems. Take a view that we can create a sort of pro-growth, market-oriented, technology-based way to get to the right answer, or to get to the right solution. And so one of the things that's going to happen with FutureGen is to grab those CO2 molecules and to permanently store them beneath the ground. We in Texas, we emit about 700 plus million cubic feet of CO2 every year. But between us, Canada, and Mexico, we have in saline formations the capacity to store 1,000 years worth of CO2 if we can prove that if you stick the molecule in the ground, it'll stay underneath the ground. In both of our sites, we've identified areas about 8,000 feet beneath the ground, about a mile and a half. Got about 2,000 feet of salt above it, below it, on the sides of it, and our state geologist is quite confident you stick that molecule, it'll stay where we put it. But they're going to be monitoring technology and verification technology and measuring technology on top of it just to make sure it doesn't burp up or go somewhere else. But that's the second piece, is to store it. Now, with all the oil folks in here and the oil and gas lawyer, they're saying, Michael, why in the world would you stick CO2 in the ground and make carbonated salt water? Because they know there's something else you can do with it. And so the third piece of FutureGen is to do what we know better than anybody else in the world here in Texas, is to take some of that CO2, stick it in a pipeline, and send it and use it for enhanced oil recovery. We've been doing that for 30 years in Texas. Today we produce about 1 million barrels of crude a day. About 180,000 of it comes from CO2 enhanced oil recovery. Our state geologist tells us that in the Permian Basin alone there's the capacity for about 8 billion barrels of crude to be produced using CO2. And elsewhere in the state is about the same capacity. And across the Gulf Coast from Texas to Florida, we can produce another 4.5 billion barrels of crude using CO2. So Sheryl Crow may be scared of CO2, but I got oil operators in West Texas that pay $10 a ton for it. And we can do some good things with it. The fourth aspect of FutureGen, you know, the president and others keep saying that one day we're going to be driving around in hydrogen-powered cars, but nobody's figured out how we're going to make the hydrogen. Well, one of the byproducts of this gasifier is hydrogen. And so in both of our sites, our proposal is to build a pipeline to put that hydrogen in the pipeline and move it to an industrial facility to make stuff out of it. The bottom line is we don't have to be afraid of CO2. There is a market-based way, and the technology can lead us in the direction to get to the right answer. Now, I know you want to ask some questions, and I want to give you that time, but Gene, before I do, I want to tell a story. And a story about a traveling man you've read about. Ever read about the story, read about Moses?
Yes, sir.
Okay, you know how Moses and his people are out in the desert, right? They knew as hard as they went, as fast as they ran, they could not get away because right smack in front of them was the Red Sea. But Moses said, look here, I have this cane. It's a blessed and magical cane. I got a special word about it. And I think if I put the cane over the water will open up. When the water opens up, we'll walk through. I'll put the cane back over the water will close up. Pharaoh and his men will be on the backside. Moses knew this idea would work. He studied it, prayed over it, got a special word about it. But he did something we do in government a lot. He formed a committee. And on the committee was a lawyer, an engineer, and a doctor. Well, you know, we had to be involved in everything, lawyers. So he goes to the lawyer and says, Mr. Lawyer, what do you think about my idea? The lawyer said, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. He said, if you hold water up in the air like that, eventually it's going to roll downstream, it's going to flood the people to the other end. We don't own the water rights, they will sue us. Don't try it. So he goes to the engineer and asks the engineer, what did he think? And I have been blessed to have been married to an engineer for 22 years. And I know the engineer said this first part. The engineer said, I have never agreed with a lawyer on anything. But I do agree on this one. That defies the laws of gravity. It won't work. You want to traverse water, got to build a bridge. So he goes to the doctor and says, Doc, what do you think about my idea? Doctor said, you know, we've been out here a long time. We got sores on the bottom of our feet. Even if we get on the other side, germs will have gotten in us and we'll die. Don't try it, it won't work. Now, Moses knew this would work. Top advisor told him, however, don't try it. So he looks to a young lady from the Dallas Council of World Affairs and says, what do you think about my idea? And Moses said, the young lady said, look, I am not a lawyer. I know nothing about defending against a lawsuit. I'm not an engineer. I know nothing about the laws of gravity. I'm not a doctor. I know absolutely nothing about the prevention of illness. But if you can pull this off, I get you three whole pages in the Bible. My friends, let me tell you something. The work you do here and sort of educating folks about issues around the world, probably not going to, it won't get you three pages in the Bible. The work we do at the commission won't either. But I have this startling feeling that if we sort of take the lesson that's in that funny little story and in the real story itself and recognize the power of what's in our own hand, and in our hand in Texas, we're blessed because we've got natural gas and we've got coal and we're going to have some more nukes, it looks like. And so we've got the capacity to provide affordable and clean and reliable power to Texans. Recognizing that that affordable energy is sort of the cornerstone of economic growth in this state and for prosperity. And it's going to be that economic growth that allows us to make the investment in clean power. My friends, we've got it available here. We just have to be smart enough to take advantage of it. And so I thank you for giving me the chance to come visit with you and spend some time with you. And as I typically say, may the peace of the Lord be with you. May God bless you. May God bless Texas. Who's got a question? Who's got a question? Who's got one? Who's got a question? Yes, sir.
What entity makes the decision whether it's Texas or the other state?
Believe it or not, it's going to be the Alliance and not the Department of Energy. We submit our last piece of paper to them Friday, and the decision is expected to be made between the end of November and December 15th. But it will be made by the Fusogen Industrial Alliance, that consortium of companies and countries.
Do you need some outpouring of public support that's quite visible to help our chances there?
I will tell you that the state has been absolutely wonderful, and people around the state have already been fabulous in supporting Fusogen. It could not hurt to have additional, but right now they're sort of down in sort of the last phase. But I will tell you, I held a competition within the state before we came down into those two sites. And there were about 18 different communities in Texas who wanted to be the Texas site. And I will tell you, when we went to one of the sites to visit them, they brought out the school band. They had, I mean, it was interesting. I mean, you get off the plane and the school band's out there playing, you know, the Eyes of Texas, which was, you know, for a guy who's a Texas elected official, that's good, but it was also right about the time of the USC-Texas battle. That's a whole different story. That's different. But, I mean, the people of Texas have been wonderful thus far. And so at this point, I think they're going to look at the grading of the financial incentives we put in, the technological submissions we have, and they're going to make their decision on that.
Just a point. Railroad Commission, you have misunderstood the name of your organization, the state committee.
In 2005, I'm going to tell you a story. Bill, put your hands over your ears. In 2005, we, the commissioners, submitted as part of our legislative agenda the following. We said, you know, we have 14 employees at the commission that deal with rail safety. Why don't you move those to TxDOT? And there's some other assorted energy activities elsewhere in state government. Why don't you move that to the Railroad Commission? And if you do that, why don't you change the name of the Railroad Commission to something like the Texas Energy Commission. And the legislature moved the 14 employees, moved some of the other energy activities, and said, and we will not change the name. So today, I have absolutely nothing to do with railroads, but we call the Railroad Commission of Texas. And I kind of like it that way. No, I don't. I just
Michael, everybody's aware electricity prices have been very high. I think a lot of it has to do with natural gas price increases. On a cost basis, ranking all the various forms of electric generation, can you rate them from the cheapest to the cheapest?
Well, let's take the four that we're actually using for the most part in Texas. Let's take wind, coal, natural gas, and the nukes. Nukes, about one and a half cent a kW. Coal running somewhere around 3-some-odd cents a kW. Natural gas, obviously depending upon what natural gas prices are, but on average in the last couple of years, about 5-6 cents kW. Wind, when it's not subsidized, is going to be greater than that. If you take the 50 states and the District of Columbia and draw a line at 25, so the group that has the highest power, the group that has the cheapest power, you'll also see something unique. Those states where 50%+ of their power is generated by coal are in the cheap part. Those states where 30%+ is natural gas are in the expensive part, but that's where natural gas is today. You know, that's that. But what the advantage that we have is that we can balance, we can have a balanced fuel source or have a fuel portfolio. Because natural gas has to be part of it. That is a native fuel for Texas. That needs to be part of our mix. Coal needs to be part of our mix, but it needs to be clean coal. And then obviously we should be thankful that, you know, earlier this week we saw an application for an additional nuclear reactor. The first nuclear reactor in the country was submitted this earlier this week. But it's very easy. And in my estimation, power costs have less to do with whether you have a regulated electricity market or a deregulated electricity market. It has more to do with what is the dominant fuel you're using to make power.
The company that just bought PXU, I can't remember the name of it, they're proposing to build power plants throughout Texas. Will you allow them to build plants prior to this,
Are you saying we meaning the state? Since I don't have jurisdiction on where they get to build them, but I let me be clear. I have jurisdiction over the fuel that's used, the coal and the natural gas, but not over whether they build the plants or not. But I think what is likely to happen. But let's not forget, we use about 66,000 megawatts of power today. But because of the growth of this state and the expectation we're going to continue to grow, we're going to need about a 30% increase in power over the next 10 to 15 years. So we don't have the option to wait for all of the advanced technologies to come online before we bring in new power. Okay? But we also have to be prudent about what power we use in the bridge. And so I think what's the compromise was TXU is going to build 3 of the traditional pulverized but cleaner than what's online today pulverized coal plants. Hopefully by the time you build FutureGen, we'll have that body of knowledge sometimes around 2011, 2012 that you can then begin that next generation of very, very clean power.
Do you have a viewpoint on ethanol? Everything I've been able to read about it, pardon the pun, I don't think it's worth the energy we're putting into it.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me see if I can do it this way. We need a whole bunch of what I would call complementary transportation fuels. I mean, we're going to be a crude-based economy for a long, long time. But I think everybody in here would agree that it is not in our state or country's best interest to be overly reliant upon, obviously, crude that comes from outside, and particularly some that comes from unstable places. And it is smart, again, for us to develop additional, what I call complementary fuels. Ethanol may be that, but it's probably going to be the generation of cellulosic ethanol, so we don't have the challenge between food and fuel. I mean, because the pigs got to eat, and the cows got to eat, and I got to eat. And I kind of like to eat without the corn being too expensive. So to the extent that we can develop the technology for developing ethanol from the non-edible part of the corn, it's going to be important. But it might also be important, David, for us as a state, because natural gas is so important to us, to look at how we expand the utilization of natural gas as a transportation fuel. You know, whether it's in our public vehicles, our fleet vehicles, through CNG and other. Yes, ma'am.
With the demand scheduled to increase like it is going to over the next several decades and so forth, how much do you think conservation efforts can impact that?
I think they're going to be important. But everything that I read suggests to us that in order for us to have increasing supply is probably going to have more to do with providing stable and lower prices than conservation. But it's important for us as a state in the country to develop conservation methods, quite frankly, because it's a good steward of the resource we've been given. But in terms of having a significant impact on price, it's going to be adding supply, in my estimation, that's going to be able to do that. Efficiencies are going to be important for us to do. Conservation is going to be important for us to do. But the most significant impact upon price is going to be increasing supplies. Thank you. Appreciate it.
For more information about the World Affairs Council of Dallas-Fort Worth, visit them on the web at www.dfwworld.org.